Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. The interview you're about to hear with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts was originally aired in the fall of 2012, and here it is. Today you'll hear the first part of a recent interview that I did with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. Paul Craig Roberts has had careers in scholarship and academia, journalism, public service, and business. He's the chairman of the Institute for Political Economy, and he served under President Reagan as Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy from 1975 to 1978. He's also the author of 11 books. The latest one is called How the Economy Was Lost, The War of the Worlds, which came out in 2010. He has a website that is paulcraigroberts.org. He has an internet column that has attracted worldwide attention, and he has many, many articles there. And I'm going to just read you the titles of a few of them. Here goes. Is Washington deaf as well as criminal? The next election, high-stakes outcomes based on non-issues. Syria, Washington's latest war crime. The neocon war criminals in our midst. USA to continue its wars as long as dollar remains reserve currency. The message from both parties is that Americans are disposable. And then here's the title that drew me to ask him for an interview. It's called The 11th Anniversary of 9/11. I frequently read his articles, and he has long been a critic of the official conspiracy theory of what happened on 9/11. So, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Could you tell our listening audience a little bit about your background in politics and in journalism?
Well, I was never exactly in politics. I was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, which is a policy position. I was in the congressional staff, House and Senate, personal staffs, committee staffs. I was the associate editor of the Wall Street Journal, columnist for the Wall Street Journal, columnist for Business Week, the Scripps Howard News Service, Creators Syndicate. I had the William E. Simon Chair in Political Economy, the Center for Strategic and International Studies at Georgetown University. And for 25, 30 years, I was a senior research fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University, held other academic appointments. And I've had some business experience. I ran a water company for 6 years. I've been an advisor to the major financial firms back when they were still honest, and other things of that sort.
That's quite an interesting background. Now, you just recently wrote an article for the Journal of 9/11 Studies called The 11th Anniversary of 9/11, and in it you state that there are only two things that one has to know about 9/11. And I wonder if you could share with the audience, what are those two things and why is that all we need to know?
Okay. The first thing that you need to know is that it's not possible. It's a fantasy that the entire national security apparatus could so totally and completely fail, as allegedly happened in the United States as a result of the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. The official story is as follows, that a few undistinguished, largely Saudi Arabian men, not backed by any government or by any intelligence service, managed to outwit not only the CIA, the FBI, the National Security Agency, which spies on the whole world, but all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies, including all intelligence agencies of America's NATO allies and Israel's Mossad, outwitted the National Security Council, NORAD, air traffic control, and somehow caused airport security to fail 4 times in 1 hour on the same morning. Now, this is a fantastic conspiracy theory. It gives these very undistinguished Arabs, who were the alleged hijackers, more powers than James Bond or V for Vendetta. These are superhuman type creatures who can outwit everything that the national security state has in place and that protected us all these years from some sort of surprise attack from the Soviet Union. But it's not credible. It's too big of a failure. Nothing worked. They were successful in everything, so nothing worked. Well, this is not credible. If this is the case, then what do we have it for?
Did you know this early on?
Well, I was bothered by it from the start, but it didn't. It takes a while to realize that your own government might do something like that. You're not instantly out there. But let me get to the second point, and I'll get back to that question. The second thing you have to know is that if such a total failure of the national security state had occurred, immediately the White House, the Congress, the media would have been demanding a full investigation. How could this happen? Somebody would have been held accountable. There would have been screams for investigations and accountability. As to how a few undistinguished people with no intelligence background or intelligence service helping them manage to so humiliate the United States in such a fantastic way. I mean, this is the greatest humiliation of a government in world history, much less of the world's only superpower. The president would have been saying, how did this happen? How could look at the humiliation? We've been defeated by a few people like this. How can we be a superpower? And there would have been all kinds of hearings and accountability. Instead, the White House refused an investigation for a year or longer and finally gave in to the 9/11 families, which would, first of all, tried to buy them off, offering them huge sums of money to go away. Some of them took it, others refused. They finally had to have a political investigation. They appointed a commission that had no experts on it, and they fed them the information that the government wanted them to have and got more or less the government's story. Well, that's not credible either. You can't have this kind of a massive failure of national security and not have a real investigation of it. So that's really all you really need to know, that the government hasn't told the truth about that day. The reason I brought this up is that there's been a huge amount of investigations carried on by independent people, many of them first-class experts, you know, high-rise architects, structural engineers, physicists, nanochemists, and they've all been able to show scientifically that the three buildings in the World Trade Center did not come down the way the government said, that it defies the laws of physics, that it couldn't have happened in that way. And they've gotten into arguments with some of the people involved claiming it was nanothermite and others saying it was some kind of a controlled energy beam, some new super weapon. And so they get arguing about things and it starts sounding science fiction with controlled energy beams. And all of this is beside the point. You don't need to know any of that.
Right, so we can avoid all that arguing and just,
So that's just what I had to say about it, that you can't account for how the national security state can so totally fail, and you can't account for how, if it did, as the government says, there were not massive investigations and all kinds of people held accountable. And instead, we're given cock and bull story about a few Saudi Arabians who are more fantastic in their capabilities than all the superheroes. So.
No, so we have all of these, the architects and engineers, we have a lot of the science that disproves the official story without a doubt. But why do you suppose that Congress and the media and even much of the public is just silent about this?
Well, the media can't say anything because it was concentrated during the Clinton years, and there's just a few firms now own the whole media. And the media is not run by journalists anymore. It's run by corporate advertising executives, and the value of the big mega companies that own the media is their broadcast licenses. And so if the government doesn't renew them, tens of billions of dollars of the company's shares are worth nothing. So they can't offend the government, and they can't offend advertisers, and they can't offend the public. And the public took me a while to face the fact that the government was capable of false flag events in order to pursue an agenda that it would not be able to get by the people without a new Pearl Harbor. So the media is useless, it's hopeless, it's impotent, it can't serve as an investigative agency, and it hasn't for years. And the Congress, the attack was so stunning, and immediately, of course, the question was revenge. And the people wanted revenge, and this was very clever, the way the neoconservatives and Cheney played it. Who was accountable was not those who failed to protect us, but the superheroes. So the whole focus instantly was shifted not to finding out what happened, how it happened, but to revenge on the alleged party, and that was said to be Bin Laden. So what could the Congress do? I mean, if a congressman had stood up and said, now, wait a minute, they would have said, oh, he's on the side of the enemies of America. So, and a few did vote against the wars that sprung out of this. But for the most part, members of Congress would have seen that as a losing position, that they would have been damned as supporting those who had attacked the United States. So they couldn't do anything. And now, of course, it's too late because they can't possibly come in now and second-guess themselves after having wasted $6 trillion on wars against Muslims.
Right, and millions of people have died in the process.
Yeah, and many Americans are dead or maimed or mentally disturbed from the service. So they're locked into it. And, of course, Obama and the Democrats are locked into it, just like the Republicans. This was a Republican enterprise, this 9/11 business, but Obama refused to hold anybody accountable for anything. And he gave them all a pass. Pass for torture, pass for spying without warrants, a pass for...
And do you think that's because they all have the same puppet master, so to speak?
That's what I think. They all have the same puppet masters, and this agenda serves the puppet masters. It produces huge profits for the military security complex that President Eisenhower warned us about maybe, what, half a century ago about. And it suits the Israel lobby. It eliminates countries in the Middle East that are capable of getting in Israel's way, at least to some extent, or who were capable of supplying Hezbollah, which successfully blocks Israel's efforts to occupy southern Lebanon. So it serves that. It's a very powerful lobby, serves their interests. Serves the security state's interests. You know, the CIA's got power and have this new police state called Homeland Security. It serves the doctrine of the unitary executive. You know, the Republican doctrine that the president in wartime has powers that are not accountable to law or the Constitution. That's something the Federalist Society has been working on since the 1980s. So there are a lot of agendas that are served by this. And, of course, now even, and it even serves the left wing, because the left wing like the argument that the Muslim terrorists did this because it's an example of blowback. It shows that we so mistreat these people and colonize them and all that, that they have revolted and struck back at us. And this is very emotionally satisfying to many people on the left wing, that finally somebody stood up to us and gave us what we deserved. And, you know, we could go on, but there's all kinds of agendas that are served by it. So now it's sort of a story in place, despite the fact that there's no evidence for it.
Right. That's the curious piece, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, there are also these psychological explanations. Many of them were presented at the Toronto hearings.
Yes, I went to those hearings. Yeah. It was quite interesting. Yeah.
And the psychological explanations are very cogent and clear. That people, just some things in reality, people can't accept. It's just too disturbing.
In your article, you also talk about Osama bin Laden's death in December of 2001, and then his useful death again in 2011. Could you talk a little bit about Osama bin Laden's role, if any, in 9/11, and then about his death?
Well, Osama bin Laden, according to him, had no role whatsoever in 9/11. The last video that is extant, that experts agree is bin Laden, was right after 9/11, and he said that he had nothing to do with it, that he was not opposed to the American people, had nothing against the American people, that he opposed the American government's colonial practices and rule over Muslim countries. And he didn't like the cultural implications imported into Islam from the debauched American culture, but he didn't have anything against Americans and had nothing to do with this. Now, I believe him because if he had had anything to do with it, he would have been bragging, because this is the way you build a movement. In fact, I'm surprised he didn't claim credit for it, even though he... because if you're trying to build a movement, an opposition movement or a revolutionary movement or attract terrorists, you want to claim, look, I've laid the great Satan low. Look what we've done. And that would just pull people to you. You see what I mean? It's a sign of your power. Now, I can remember back in the Cold War period, there would be terrorist events in Europe, Italy, for example, and we were all told it was the Red Brigades and something, but 3, 4, 5 groups would claim credit. And it later turned out from the Italian hearings that all these terrorist events were conducted by the CIA and intelligence. And they were designed to stop people from voting communist. And so the groups claiming credit were all CIA front groups.
But well, that's rich, isn't it?
It is rich, but still, you know, it shows that the United States government understands that terrorist group would be claiming credit. Well, so he didn't, so that's kind of a dead giveaway. I think the other giveaway is that if they were able to pull off something like that, they wouldn't have stopped with that.
Right.
But there's not been anything else. So, in other words, it would have happened all over, repeatedly. And there's so many soft targets in the United States, even still today. And this is why you can see that the terrorist threat is a hoax, because not a single thing has happened except the things the FBI organizes.
You're referring to like the underwear bomber and those
things? Well, I'll get to that. But like here, they every now and then they claim, oh, there's a terrorist group. Remember there was one that was going to blow up the Sears Tower.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out there were a few, well, they're just, I guess, mentally disturbed people, and they were rounded up by the FBI and paid money to be part of a plot. The whole idea came from the FBI, and the organization came from the FBI, and so if they were real terrorists, you wouldn't have the FBI out. They call these sting operations. You wouldn't have the FBI out having to do all of this because they'd have their hands full. And just look at the airport security thing. It's pointless if there's real terrorists because they wouldn't try to go through the machines. They would get in those massive lines. For example, you go through Atlanta Airport in the afternoon, the line waiting to get in to go through the security would be 500 people in it. You'd get in there and set your bomb off there. There's no way they can screen you before they can screen you.
Right. And that would do more damage than an airplane.
It would do far more damage. It would give the American authorities an insoluble problem. You've got to screen people before you screen them. How do you do that? And, of course, there's the shopping centers. And there's all these electric substations everywhere that are just unguarded. If you drive along the road, you see them. Just sit. And an attack on those, there's no way to prevent it. It could shut down the energy supply in a third of the country without any trouble. And the simplest thing of all would be for them just to drive along in the rush hour traffic in New York and Washington, Atlanta, Dallas, Los Angeles, and just throw out boxes of roofing nails. You would have tens of thousands of cars, flat tires, and choked all the freeways. It would take weeks to clear it out. But nothing has happened. So the number of soft targets, as I said, is massive, and none of them have been hit. It's been 11 years, and not a single thing has happened. Now, the underwear bomber, the shoe bomber, the shampoo and bottle of water bomber, these are not credible. They're not credible because it's not credible that if Al-Qaeda pulled off 9/11, they would be resorting to such comic and ineffective means. It certainly wouldn't be relying on lighting a shoe bomb or underwear bomb with a match. The guy would take out his cell phone or his laptop, push a button, and there we go. So it's so primitive to try to sell something like that to people after you've said, oh, look, they've destroyed 3 World Trade Center towers. They destroyed the Pentagon. You can't have superheroes and then reduce them to comic characters.
Yet the public falls for that.
Yeah, they fall for it because no one says, wait a minute. I think if we had a media that said, oh, this is ridiculous, and people might say, oh, yes, I see what you mean. But they don't get that opportunity. They can't think for themselves, but if somebody thinks for them, they can see sometimes, or some of them can. Now, the real giveaway is the underwear bomber, because this person had no passport, and the airlines refused to board him. And so this is on Christmas Day on a flight going to Detroit, and the airlines say, no, can't board you, no passport. I mean, you couldn't do that long before there was any terror. The airline wasn't going to send you to a country that couldn't accept you because you didn't have a passport.
Right.
I mean, even in my day, you couldn't do that. You couldn't get on an international flight without a passport or a visa or something. This guy has nothing. So this official appears who walks him on the plane. Well, what kind of official has the authority to override all the rules in place? I don't know who that official is. And an official with that kind of authority would know full well that the guy is going to be rejected when the plane lands in Detroit. He's not going to be allowed in. He's got no passport. He can't get through passport control. They're going to send him right back. So what was the point of it? The anomaly is you've got someone with the authority to override all the operating rules and put somebody on a plane without a passport, and yet assume this guy with all his authority didn't know that the person on the plane without a passport wouldn't be accepted and would be sent back. So it's a pointless exercise. And so obviously it was intended for this person to be on the airplane. And of course, it wasn't a bomb. There's been no evidence ever presented that this was anything more than firecracker powders. But again, if you look at the amazing feat of 9/11 that's ascribed to bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and then you look at the pitiful comic things, they don't match. They don't go together.
And I'm assuming that my guess is that the government is doing that to keep us in fear so that we do think that there's this threat out there ongoing?
Yeah, it keeps fear. Of course, they make, you know, Chertoff, the first Homeland Security director, has made a fortune selling all of the scanning materials to the Transportation Safety Administration. So that it lets them sell the machines. It lets them keep the fear alive that we're under attack, and then they use that to erode the civil liberties. I mean, that's how they took away habeas corpus, due process, and now even your right to life, because they can now shoot you down and say, oh, well, we think he's a terrorist. So it let them gain unaccountable power. And, of course, that's what the German Nazi, Goebbels, I think it was, or Goering, one of them, at the Nuremberg trial said, look, all you have to do is tell the people they're being attacked, and that generates fear, and then you can do whatever you want. And that's how we took over the German state. Well, that's happened here. That's exactly what's happened here.
Getting back to Osama bin Laden and his recent death in Pakistan, what do you think of that?
Well, I think it was it's a hoax, and it was done because Obama was sinking in the polls, and there was fear that the Democrats themselves might run a candidate against him for the nomination. And he and his people didn't want that. So they said, what can we do? We can make him a hero. He'll kill bin Laden. Now, bin Laden couldn't have possibly still been alive. We know that in October of 2001, he was undergoing kidney dialysis. And in December of 2001, there were widespread reports, also from our own government, that he had died. So no one that needs kidney dialysis is going to live on the run for 10 years. And at the alleged compound in Pakistan, there was no sign of any kidney dialysis machine or any other kind of medical, no doctors. And the most stunning thing is, if this is the mastermind of the world's most dangerous terrorist movement, like Rumsfeld and Cheney and everybody said, would they leave him unguarded?
Right.
Nobody there but two women? This is nonsensical. It's not believable. And since he was unarmed, why would they kill him? If
right.
This is the mastermind, you can find out everything. And if you did kill him, wouldn't you at least want to show that you had killed him? No, we dumped him in the ocean somewhere.
In the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night. So how can anybody believe such an absurd,
that is incredible,
concocted lie? I can't understand how anybody could fall for that. But I guess people, maybe it satisfies them. Oh, we finally got the guy who did this to us. And they're happy.
Yeah, maybe they want to believe it. Yeah,
they want to believe it. That's what happens. Yeah.
So how do you respond to it when people claim that if some part of the U.S. government had been involved in 9/11, somebody would have talked about it by now?
Well, in many ways. First of all, it's not true. For example, in 1967, the Israelis attacked the USS Liberty. They either killed or wounded the majority of the crew, failed to sink the ship, and the United States government covered it up. I mean, the whole story is known now. It's all out and known. And they told the survivors in a very threatening way, don't mention this, don't you dare say a word about this. And it was 12 years before one of the surviving officers on the ship wrote the story and told it. And it was back in the 80s or 90s when Admiral Tom Morrow, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who failed ever to get the government to acknowledge it, he finally convened on his own a commission. It consisted of him, the former chief legal officer of the United States military, and one of the ambassadors who had heard all the radio transmissions and knew all about it, and they documented the story, and still the government won't. And even if somebody says something, they just say, oh, he's lost his mind.
Right.
Or he's a conspiracy kook. Or they just don't pay attention. They just ignore it.
Right, the media doesn't give it any attention.
It just doesn't get reported. And
right.
Look, we've got 110 of the first responders. These are firemen who are in the buildings, policemen. They were the building maintenance people. And they report hearing numerous explosions all over the building from top to bottom, including in the sub-basements. And this is documented. It has no effect. So, in my own opinion, literally everybody involved could stand up and said, we did it. And somebody would say, oh, it's just a joke.
They're not going to let anything out that doesn't agree with the official story at this point.
Well, I think they can let it out now. It just wouldn't be believed.
So, in your article, you also state that most Americans are too mentally and emotionally weak to be able to come to grips with the truth.
Yeah.
Could you talk a bit more about that? I know you've touched on it a little bit, but maybe you could tell us more about that.
Well, that's based on reading all of the reports from psychologists about how people can't deal with things. But I see it myself. I've got a lot of friends. I've got 130 IQs, successful people, lawyers, and they just can't admit that their worst enemy is their own government. It's just too discomforting, and it shatters their whole worldview about how things work. And their notion is, we have to get this group, we have to get that, we have to use the government, we have to get them, we have to get that. But if the government is actually not on your side, all of your hopes and illusions and worldview just falls apart. So all the enemies they want to get, they can't get. They can't get the towel heads. They can't get the poor. They can't get the welfare queens. They can't. The things that they've been worked up about all their life, if the government is not on their side, how are they going to get all these things they've been worked up about all their life? So I think on the whole that this is a sign of extreme mental weakness and emotional weakness.
It's a large leap to make from our original beliefs, the myths about America, to what's really happening.
Yeah, and we've been propagandized in them so thoroughly. I mean, the Cold War is what let the government take over people's minds. Because here we had this Soviet evil, nuclear annihilation hanging over our head. And Washington put on the white hat and wore it for half a century. And it was very successful propaganda.
You've just been listening to the first part of an interview with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. You can learn more about him and read his articles at the website paulcraigroberts.org. Tune in next week to hear the conclusion of our interview. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.